from savings in construction contracts, which have been coming in way under budget. And so then the question is, what do we do with that money? $20 million is a lot of money. It works out, though, to 7.5 cents per average domestic ratepayer per month, or 90 cents per month, less than a per year, less than a dollar.
One time.
One time. I'm getting there.
Oh, sir.
Yeah. So it's not even an ongoing, it's a one-time savings, because we are hoping that we're coming through the recession, and although that will mean that construction contracts will start coming back in at the expected value, it means that we won't be having, and that's good for the construction industry, it does mean that we won't be having ongoing savings probably. So it's 90 cents one time, and when you start looking at it that way, the next question is, if we don't refund the 90 cents or use it to pay down the rates for next year, what could we do with that $20 million? And the answer is, it would give and keep 280 jobs in construction. So I think, certainly for myself as a ratepayer, if I'm asked, would you like to get your 90 cents back, or would you like to help employ 280 people locally in our city to provide infrastructure improvements in neighborhoods, my answer is, I'd like to help. I'd like to make sure that those services are provided. Then the question is, what kind of services are we buying with that ratepayer money? And let's be very clear. We are all committed to using ratepayers' money for the purpose that ratepayers pay it, and that is for projects done by the managed by the Bureau of Environmental Services for stormwater and sewer projects. So then you look at, should we do green projects or should we do hard pipe projects? And that's been some of the debate over the past couple of weeks. We adopted under Commissioner Adams's leadership in 2007, we adopted the Green Streets policy. And one of the reasons that we did that is because it's actually cheaper to manage stormwater on the surface in vegetated swales and ditches and curb extensions than it is to build bigger pipes under the streets. It's better for the environment. It's multiple purpose to do what we call green streets. And if you do these curb extensions and the swales at the side of the street down the planter strip, that looks better in the neighborhood, it manages the stormwater better, and it results in a street that is less likely to have speeding cars going on it and more likely to have safe streets for both pedestrians and bicycles. So for those reasons, I believe that this use of this money is appropriate use of environmental services money. I know that the Bureau of Transportation, Sue Keel, and the Environmental Services, Dean Marriott, are going to work very hard to make sure that the projects funded with ratepayer money is going to actually help with things like sewer basement backup, that they are going to look at both the combined sewer overflow areas to make sure that the particular projects funded are the ones which are going to help with sewer issues and backup issues. They're also going to look at geographic equity and make sure that there's some projects in all five quadrants of the city, as well as probably concentrating most of them in the areas that are most affected by sewer backups. And in fact, we have maps that show where they are. I have one right, well, you're not gonna be able to see this. It's small, but it's there. All of this information is on my blog on my website on portlandonline.com. So if you just go to that website, there's a lot more details, of course, because that's what I do, to find out. But for those reasons, I believe that this is using sewer money appropriately and that it's the best thing to do. And I commend Mayor Adams for your leadership in this and for giving me the time to come to this conclusion. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to associate myself with Commissioner Fritz's remarks, but I want to begin by saying that before I had the pleasure of moving to Portland, I once lived in a city, in an apartment in a city, along a great boulevard, and one day the city announced they were going to repave the street, and they took about 5 years, and they disrupted everything along that street and probably put most of the businesses out of business. And just when they finished the street and cut the ribbon, they came in and dug up the street again because they had forgot to do the infrastructure beneath the street, which was a subway, and they needed to address that, and apparently the left hand and the right hand were not coordinated. So for me, this marriage of green streets and active transportation gives us the promise of, in effect, doubling our benefits through critical investments to achieve multiple city goals. And I think that is the artfulness of the mayor's proposal, and I support it today. There are three specific conditions to my support. The first is the commitment that this will not raise sewer rates. That has been made explicitly clear throughout this debate. Second, that these projects will address storm water. And if that primary benefit was not achieved first, I don't think any of us here would support it. And third, we need to make sure that the benefits of this proposal, as the mayor has proposed, are spread throughout the city, and that all parts of the city see the benefits of these green street improvements. And Mayor, I compliment you for putting access at the heart of your proposal citywide. So for all of these reasons, I will support this proposal, and I want to commend the mayor not only for leading the way on this proposal, but also in his most recent email and other communication, clearing up what I think were some of the misconceptions about what the city is intending to do, providing some clarity so that I believe each of us on this council has the necessary comfort level to join with you in supporting this measure. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Well, I, too, appreciate the thoughtfulness behind this proposal, and I've been dismayed at how it's been misrepresented in parts of the community in Portland that have motivated some to mischaracterize how this money is being spent. The truth is that it's a thoughtful approach to a very complex problem. And I will tell you, all Portlanders should appreciate it, but particularly for those that live east of, say, 72nd Avenue, who bicycle. And I picked that because that's precisely where the bike boulevard ends for those that live east of 72nd, and I'll remind some that the boundaries of Portland go out to 164th. One, and I see Jonathan sitting back here, and I know he knows from experience that one takes one's life in their hands when you ride a bike east of 72nd in this city. Not only are there no safe routes east, they are unsafe and require citizens to travel in very, very precarious traffic mediums that we shouldn't allow. This proposal helps address that geographic inequity that exists amongst Portlanders currently. We shouldn't just allow bioswales and green streets to be built within the traditional boundaries of Portland, which are generally from 42nd to 82nd, but actually also out into the other areas that have been annexed to the city that lack sidewalks, that lack some of the basic infrastructure that most Portlanders take for granted, and those who live east of 72nd can only pray to have. This doesn't fix all that, but it certainly makes it safer for those Portlanders who are finding affordable housing east of 72nd and who want to be able to commute with their bicycle. I have gotten that from the moment that this proposal was brought forward and have appreciated Mayor Adams' insistence consistently since he was a commissioner for geographic equity for all Portlands when it comes time to spending money. And that actually, it's not just a fancy political term. It actually means something and can actually make Portland a safer place for all. So thank you, Mayor Adams, for leading this effort, and I appreciate the work on behalf of all the advocates who have brought us to this point, and I'm very pleased to support this. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you, and I want to thank the City Council for digging into the details of this issue. I realize, unfortunately, it still is considered innovative to try to get a twofer or a threefer off the same investments to prevent one bureau from doing good work and another bureau from doing good work in silos, which equals bad work. So I want to thank them for digging into the details of this issue, having been the proposer of the March 2007 Green Street Strategy and the proposer of the 2008 Greater Green Strategy, and having been the lead negotiator with EPA on preventing the federal agency from imposing what I thought were wasteful additional mandates that would have skyrocketed sewer bills in the city, and that was in with support from the City Council, but in combination with Commissioner Leonard's help as well. This is absolutely consistent with city policy. The fact that green streets are largely the Green Street plan is significantly unfunded speaks to the need to focus more on it. The fact that the initial proposal that came out from the Bureau that has been widely reported, not my proposal, reported as my proposal, but not my proposal, had all of the savings going into gray pipes only, I think speaks to the work we have to do even internally to move forward our green agenda as it relates to stormwater, rainwater, the 37 inches of rain we get a year. How do we get the most out of it for ratepayers to prevent more costs? We need to stretch the $1.4 billion investment we've made in Big Pipe. We need to stretch out the time that it will still be useful to us, because if we don't, it'll be a matter of decades within our children's lifetime where future councils will be figuring out how do we build another one of these things. And we can avoid that with a green approach and at the same time save lives. Every time a Portlander is injured, every time a Portlander is killed as a pedestrian or bicyclist, Portlanders rightfully ask, why aren't you doing more? Well, the swale on the corner for Green Street is a piece of, not the total set of what you need to create, but a key piece of making a bike boulevard. And when we did polling, one of the top items from folks that never get on a bike, one of the top items for folks that would ride a bike if they felt safer was, as much as possible, get the bikes off the busiest streets, remove the conflict and the potential conflict with cars, take an adjacent street, a quieter street, and make it a bike boulevard. So I really thank everyone for digging into the details. Continue to dig into the details. I think when you see how this is actually a twofer, how it saves lives, how it moves forward on our climate action goals, is very consistent with being the operator of a stormwater sewer agency. Stormwater means rain. I think people will find that it absolutely is in keeping with what we're trying to accomplish on multiple levels. So I thank you all. I want to thank especially Catherine Charlo in my office for her work on this and the good team at PBOT. Thank you. Aye.
Mayor, point of order. Can we just do a time check? Are we going to work through the regular agenda?
Do you have a suggestion?
Well, I know there's been people waiting here all morning for items that are towards the end of the agenda, and I know some are waiting for the next item, and I plan to have a couple people here for my resolution. So I just want to know if we're going to break or not. I guess I'd like to keep working through it. That's my preference.
Okay. Everyone else okay with that? We're all okay with that? Point of order. We're working through lunch. So call your staffs and have something brought in. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 374.
Create new categories of residential waste and recycling collection services and establish areas within Portland where new categories of services will be made initially available.
First, we have...
Mayor, excuse me. You did not say we couldn't take a bathroom break.
You can take a bathroom break. So we have some in four neighborhoods to be decided in the next couple of weeks. Every household will be getting their own complimentary countertop sealed, sealable composter. And I wanted to make sure that each member of council got theirs. I'll sign them. I'll autograph them later if you want. Is that five? One, two, three, four. Oh, I got mine. All right. No. Did you read the title already? Okay. Well, I'm pleased to, I talked about this in my State of the City speech, and I'm pleased to bring forward. Actually, can you also read the title for 375?
Mm-hmm. 375, create new categories of residential waste and recycling collection services and establish areas within Portland where new categories of services will be made initially available.
All right. This spring, 2,000 Portland households will be selected to participate in a pilot for weekly food scrap curbside collection. Portlanders already lead the nation in residential recycling, and this pilot is an essential step in implementing phase two of the Portland Recycles Plan and brings Portland in line with other West Coast communities like Seattle and San Francisco by offering residents curbside collection of food scraps. The pilot will roll out in May, and it will go citywide within the year after. Compostable food and food spoiled paper account for almost 30% of Portland's garbage, residential garbage. In the landfill, this waste produces methane, which is one of the most destructive and most potent greenhouse gas that causes climate change. Instead of all this waste, it can be composted and produced a valuable agricultural product for healthier soils and gardens. Diverting food waste from landfills will play an important role in meeting our climate change goals. So I'm pleased to introduce Bruce. Are you going to take it from here?
Yes. Thank you. Mayor and commissioners, I'm Bruce Walker of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm the Solid Waste and Recycling Program Manager. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And you, where's your green?
Well, there's a little in there.
Mm-hmm.
I tried. So to recap, in 2007, City Council adopted the Portland Recycles Plan that set an aggressive 75% recycling goal and directed implementation of phase one of the Portland Recycles Plan that led to delivery of the blue recycling carts and the green compost carts to residents throughout the city. That occurred in 2008. We saw a boost in the recycling and composting rate of about 14%. That's good news. We actually expected more than that, but what we found was people weren't quite purchasing as much, weren't by the recession affected it. So the good news was people were throwing away almost 10% less garbage. So the good news is the carts still found a way to increase by almost 10,000 tons per year of additional recycling and composting, but we also saw a bigger decrease in some of the disposal from the solid waste. So that's the good part. What we're doing now in moving ahead as part of the Portland Recycles Plan is beginning the pilot for phase two. We have two ordinances today. One is to establish the pilot areas and to set up the program. The second is to set rates for the customers in the pilot areas. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But I wanted to just touch on a couple of the things we're testing. Obviously, we're reviewing the food compost and making that opportunity for customers. We're also testing every other week garbage service. Why is that important? Because in some of the cities that Mayor Adams referred to, San Francisco and Seattle, they retained weekly garbage service, and people didn't participate as much. This is our opportunity to challenge ourselves and to see if we can move ahead with an aggressive recycling and composting program to challenge people to recycle and compost as much as possible and see if we can reduce the need for weekly garbage service. Secondly, we're also going to test every other week recycling. Why would we do that? When we delivered the cart, it doubled the capacity of the two recycling bins we used to have. So we believe we should at least test it because that would remove the need to have additional trucks throughout the neighborhoods. So we think
you meant every other week?
Yes.
Garbage pickup, didn't you?
In some areas, we are also testing every other week recycling.
Okay.
So this pilot is really going to be out there to test. We'll come back with evaluative information that would be shared with council before we go forward.
So Bruce, just to summarize, for certain segment of the 2,000, we'll be testing one approach, another approach for another segment of the 2,000 customers to see how people respond. And
that's right. All customers in the pilot areas will have every other week garbage. That will be tested. They will have weekly green cart service with food waste added. In part of the pilot areas, we are testing every other week recycling to see if that will work.
The blue bit.
Correct.
Right.
I'd like to introduce Ariane Sperry to who's our project lead on this, to touch on a couple of the other program elements.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for your work as well.
So we're giving the pilot participants that lovely kitchen pail to collect all their food scraps. And when I say all food scraps, I mean not just vegetables and fruits, but meat, bones, fish, cheese, nuts, beans, bread, rice, pasta, donuts, coffee filters, coffee grounds, scrapings from your dinner plate, all food. And just put it in the kitchen pail. And
banana
then,
peels?
Pardon? Banana peels, bones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bones?
Bones, yes. Donuts. You know, whatever you want to put in there.
Moldy cheese?
Moldy cheese. That's all good. I'm not hungry anymore. And you can empty that regularly into the green cart, and that will be picked up weekly, as Bruce mentioned.
And my understanding is that soiled pizza boxes can go in the green cart, too.
Yeah, right? Pretty exciting, huh?
That's very exciting.
So the pilot's going to take place in four neighborhoods around the city. There's one in Northeast, one east of I-205, one in Southeast, and one in Southwest. And
if I might just interrupt, there was a letter in the newspaper a while back that said that they should be in the commissioner's neighborhoods, and I asked the staff, could we please have it in mine? So I think you're not announcing just yet which the neighborhoods are. Is that correct?
Yeah, we need to finalize that.
Yeah. So I would like to say, for the record, I will be disappointed if it's not mine, but I don't expect any special treatment, and I'm looking forward to the whole project.
Yeah, I would be happy to as well.
Great. That's great. We'll keep that in mind. So the areas, we're choosing them based on the four haulers, service areas that have volunteered to help us with this pilot. And also we want to capture a broad range of demographics as well as geographic areas around the city so we get the broadest range of feedback, because we really see this pilot as an opportunity to learn. And so getting that feedback is really important. We're planning on collecting a lot of data to determine program effectiveness. So how much food actually migrates from the garbage can to the green cart. And then we'll also be surveying participants before and after the survey to capture their perceptions and attitudes. And we'll be using all that data to improve the program before we look to move citywide, hopefully next spring, 2011. And then we'll also be monitoring the haulers' costs as they provide this new service, so that we can feed that into a new rate structure as we also look to citywide implementation. Because the rates that we've proposed for the pilot, they're getting closer to what we anticipate the real cost of service will be for this new suite of services. But we won't know for sure until we actually run the pilot. So, and I think the important piece is that we want the pilot rates to be as realistic as possible so that we can really monitor behavior changes. We want to see what those customers are doing. Do they need more capacity? Do they need to move up a can size? How many people opt to stay with weekly garbage service?
So there's always fear and consternation and anticipation by some with change. Can you just give us a brief overview of our sister cities, Seattle to the north and San Francisco to the south, how long they've been at it, and has there been good acceptance and good utilization of the food, scrap, curbside composting?
Seattle has been doing it for 5 years.
Well, in terms of all food waste, including the banana peels, they've been at it for just over a year. San Francisco's been doing it over 5 years. So the initial participation in the first part in both cities was in the 25% to 40% range, which I believe is part of is because they allowed the weekly garbage service to continue, and they didn't make the change like, for example, the city of Olympia did, that moved to the every other week garbage that really swings it. Whether you want to call it an incentive or a disincentive, it moves people to use the green cart.
What kind of utilization is Olympia getting?
They've got, in terms of customer participation, over 70% in their compost cart.
Thanks. Sorry to interrupt you.
Sure. But my impression is from talking to folks that, you know, depending on participation levels, they still have really high acceptance of the program and people really like it. So looking at the proposed rates, you'll notice that for the vast majority of customers, if you stay with your same can size, your rates will not increase. The exception is monthly customers. That's about 8% of households. They'll see an increase in their bill just because they're actually receiving additional collections in terms of their yard debris and their food waste, but they're not having a corresponding decrease in their garbage collections. So correspondingly, the folks who receive every other week recycling will see a decrease in their bill. And so we anticipate some folks may need more capacity in their garbage, and they'll be able to increase their can size for just a few more dollars a month. And these pilot rates make it more affordable for those folks that need to do that. And we will be offering weekly garbage service for those folks that really want it still. But it will be expensive, because it's very inefficient for the haulers to drive through the neighborhoods for just a few households. So
how much more expensive will that be?
It'll be whatever your standard current rate is, it will be double that.
And I want to thanks before we move to, how many people have signed up?
No one else signed up.
Okay. I just want to thank the participating haulers in the pilot. Really appreciate it very much, including Allied Waste, Aero Sanitary, Heiberg Garbage Service, and Waste Management. Thank you for being part of this pilot. It's a good cross-section of strictly local and folks that have regional and national operations as well.
A couple questions.
Please.
The survey that you're doing, the before survey, is that going to include how people like their current survey? I think when we went to the big green and blue bins, we said we'd do a follow-up to make sure that people are happy with that. Mm. Have we done that?
The before survey is absolutely intended to get a good snapshot of where they're at. And we could definitely ask a question about the conversion to the big bin.
Yeah, I'd like
follow-up
study.
We did that.
You did?
In the pilot areas, yeah, and there was very high satisfaction.
Right. We received positive feedback not only through the an advanced survey we did with the curbsider that was mailed out, but also, as Commissioner Saltzman was referring to, in the pilot areas we did follow-up. We also rely on the auditor's SEA analysis of, and that's not, it doesn't say blue, your new blue recycling cart, but it, the overall satisfaction level, good and very good, is a very high rating.
I think it's another opportunity to get another of the twofers that the mayor was, just now that we've had them for however long we've had them, just let's find out whether people like them. I come to get used to them. And my second question is about cat litter. Can that go in the composting?
No, it cannot.
So that is a concern that I've heard from constituents who rightly are concerned about whether that's going to last for 2 weeks in between. Is there any thought given to small, I don't know, what
small
else
cats?
Could be done? I actually use flushable litter for our indoor cats, but not everybody chooses to do that. So,
Can you air out a little bit about the issues around waste and cat litter and those things?
Yeah, I think that our messaging to folks that are concerned about that would be to make sure that you're securely bagging your waste so that it doesn't smell. And
no, why is it we're not composting cat litter?
Oh,
that's a good answer too.
Yep.
Right. The facilities that we're working with, they don't accept that waste.
And tell me again where we're taking this, the new mixed composting to, which, how far away is it going to be, and what are our plans for bringing?
Yeah, so currently our food waste from our commercial program goes to a facility up in near Seattle, and we have three facilities in the Portland region that are currently working to get their permits through DEQ to accept food waste. And so the amount that we have for the pilot is pretty small. And so we have enough capacity to handle the pilot material at the facilities that we have available now. And as we move citywide, we're working with Metro to develop more capacity, and we anticipate that the facilities that are working to get permitted will be permitted by the time we roll out citywide.
Great. Thank you very much.
We've been actively recruiting a number of composting companies to locate here, and the pilot is also intended to break a little bit out of sort of the chicken and the egg. Sort of, they're not willing to make the big capital investment to locate a plant closer until they get a sense that they're going to have a flow of raw materials. So, you know, we're hoping that the pilot will show to them that we're serious about this, and that the investment that they're contemplating is a wise one to make, because we will pursue it beyond the pilot.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right. Anyone wish to testify on this matter?
Can we ask questions?
Come on up and testify. That's a...
Just a simple question. Did I hear it right that the rate will double?
Go ahead.
If you stay with your same can size and you go with the standard service of every other week garbage, your rate will not increase at all. But if you opt for weekly garbage service, then your rate will increase.
Thank you. That's the inducement.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else? All right, this is a non-emergency ordinance and moves to a second reading. And Carla, can you please read, or both move to a second reading. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 376?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Metro, City of Lake Oswego, Clackamas County, Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District, and the Oregon Department of Transportation regarding the donation of a portion of the Willamette Shoreline right-of-way to TriMet for the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project.
Shoshana Oppenheim. Ms. Oppenheim, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Council.
What are we looking at here?
Today's action allows the city to enter into an IGA to donate a portion of the Willamette River shoreline to TriMet to be used as local match in the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project. So do you have any questions? I'm happy to give a presentation, but I don't.
I actually think it would be helpful. I know that the time is going on, but I actually do think it would be helpful for citizens if you did your presentation.
Sure. In 1994, the city of Portland and several other jurisdictions entered into an agreement to create a consortium to manage the Willamette River shoreline right-of-way, which was originally a railroad right-of-way owned by the Southern Pacific Railroad. And that idea was always to keep this right-of-way as a right-of-way for high-speed rail or transit uses. So now we're at the time where we're using that right-of-way for the Portland-Milwaukee project. The right-of-way is valued at $21 million and will be used as the local match as part of the Portland-Milwaukee project.
So we owe a debt of gratitude to the consortium that bought this right-of-way from Southern Pacific. Is it 2 decades ago, more or less?
I think it was in the early 80s.
And they bought it for?
$2 million.
$2 million. It's now valued at $21 million, which, again, counts for a match with the federal government of cash. So thank you to those of you that worked on this a long time ago.
It's actually valued at even more. That's just the portion that's going to be used for this project.
Great. All right. Thanks. Anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right. Would you please call the vote?
Fritz.
Well, I was confident that asking Shoshana to go through the details was not going to take a long time because you're very efficient, and I know you always know your facts. So thank you very much. I greatly appreciate the presentation. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you, Shoshana. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Shoshana. Aye. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance item number 377?
extend contract with Cale Parking Systems USA, Inc., and increase authority to purchase additional parking pay stations, support services, and product enhancements.
Sue Keel.
Hi. This is a straight business decision, and I think we have talked with staff in all of your offices in preparation for this. It's an opportunity for us to take advantage of a contract that exists. We have done the strong financial analysis that would tell us that this is the best option for our ratepayers, taxpayers. And secondly, we've done the surveying of the marketplace, so we know that among those cities that have recently purchased or become involved with parking meter contracts, that this is as good as is out there. So it's an opportunity to extend a contract that we have for technology that we have in place already and a provider who is currently providing good service for us. So Ellis can answer any technical questions and tell you about some of the additional features, but straight business decision.
So the just to underscore what some of the written material is, the Stelio, is that how you say it?
That's correct. That's
Stelio. The Stelio pay stations are in the eighth year of their 10-year estimated life. And we're having the kind of maintenance requirements that one would expect from technology that is about 80% used up.
Yep.
So I know that we have frustrated Portlanders with a lot of maintenance issues with the Stelios, and I know that many people would be grateful if with moving on to better technology, newer technology. Would you agree with that?
I would. And my name is Ellis McCoy, first of all, and I'm the parking operations manager in transportation. And to piggyback on what Sam is suggesting, there are two types of meters we actually have in town now. The older first generation ones are ones with the P hat. And if you're old enough to remember the Gumby character that used to be on television, they look like the Gumbies. And the the Calais pay stations are the ones without the P hat. And in 2006, we actually contracted for the Calais pay stations to resolve some of the performance issues we were having with the older Stelio pay stations. Those performance issues that we were looking for improvement on had to dealt with the card reader, they dealt with solid state memory, they dealt with the configuration for wireless services, they dealt with programming flexibility and proprietary parts issues. And since then, the Calais have performed very well for us. They've helped us achieve lower our operating costs, and they've helped improve our customer service in a number of areas. One example of that is that they worked with us and specifically our Bureau of Technology Services to develop a model where we send all of our bank card transactions to the Portland Gateway through Portland Online. That is helped us lower our costs and provide better customer service, and we're actually the only city that I'm aware of that actually does that for on-street parking. Sue alluded to the financial and market analysis that we did. The survey that we did of 16 cities showed pricing for pay stations at $7,900 a piece. Our current contract with Calais is $7,150. They also showed pricing for back office services of $45 per meter per month. Our current contract price is currently 19 and would go down to 17 with this particular contract. And also an important thing to understand about the pricing with Calais, we know that they're giving us the lowest price because they have a favored nations clause in other cities' contracts around the city. And what that says is that if they offer a lower price to someone else, they'd have to change the pricing in other contracts, so they put us on notice that the current pricing is the lowest they could provide us with. So we're recommending that council approve amending this contract because of the financial and market analysis that we stated, also because Calais has provided us with great service over the years, and they're providing us with a number of technological advantages that are going to improve customer service. Council can extend the contract for another 5 years. We've worked with the Bureau of Purchases on this, and they're supporting the amendment. And the plan for financing this this amendment is in the current PBOT budget. The proposed amendment for 5 years would extend the contract through June 2016. It provides a commitment for the purchase of 1,000 meters, which is just about the number we need to replace all the Stelios. And the purchase authority would provide us the ability to purchase up to 1,500 if we needed to move pay stations into different areas. And the amendment totals about $15 million, and that will be used to secure annual revenues of $20 million each year that we generate from our on-street parking.
Do the new pay stations also have solar electric cells?
Yes, they do.
They also have a light.
A light?
Oh, or, good. So that you can, for it lights up with a motion-sensitive trigger on it, which is kind of a nice feature.
What Sue is referring to is there are a few technological advancements that Cali is proposing. This light bar that she's referring to, our customers have been asking for that for a number of years. We have extended hours in the evening. Sometimes it's difficult for customers to see the face of the pay station, and this illuminates that. Also, there's a four-line display, which will allow us to put more information on the face of the meter so the customer can get full breadth of all the parking regulations in one glance. And actually, they're also providing us with a professional help desk service. And actually, they're providing that service now to a number of cities around the country, so we'll be taking part of that service, and they'll be providing service to our customers on basically a 24/7 basis. Anybody has a problem with the meter or anything, they can call in.
You know, in light of the presentation earlier on Google and high-speed internet, do the new pay stations and the new technology allow us to potentially speed up the process of verifying your credit card?
That particular technology in particular, I don't think would address that potential. We're talking about the wireless communicate capability now, which is different than the broadband. And what affects that speed is our ability to process it at our payment gateway, which the city controls. And we are making some improvements on that area now.
Just the only comment I would make on that, particularly on rainy days, is when we hear from people. And it is striking that you go into a Seattle's Best or Starbucks, and it takes about 2 seconds to process your debit card. And sometimes it does take quite a while to get the authorization at a meter. And I just wonder if there's a way to, over time, accelerate that.
Yeah, well, phone lines are usually quicker than the wireless systems. What is going to speed up that is going to be the advancement in wireless technology, GPRS to edge, and other faster technologies that AT&T are looking at. AT&T actually is teaming up with Google on faster wireless technology. So that will be probably coming up in the next few years. So.
Talk to him about the smart card, too.
Oh. Well, there is a quicker way to get your transactions processed, and that's what Sue is alluding to. And smart cards are basically a prepaid method of purchasing time. If you load the value onto the card and then debit from the card, it only takes 2 or 3 seconds. So.
You win. I'm going to get
okay.
One. I'm going to get one.
Well, it is a to remind everyone the history. We were losing a lot of money, and you actually...
That's correct.
Because we were having bad cards being used, and so we were giving away parking. And this is a bureau that needs money. So we went to the authorization, and how much do we save, more or less, each year?
$600,000, actually, is what we saved in transaction costs. And what the mayor is referring to is when we first... With the old Stelio systems, we had batch transactions, and what that meant was we accepted all the transactions at the meters on faith that they were good, and then we submitted them later for processing. And if some of those cards were bad, we would have to accept that loss. And to process those transactions, the bank cards charged a much higher fee. We were paying 12.5 cents on the dollar for those transactions, and we were
for that batch transaction,
and we're processing $500,000 transactions a month, so that wound up being high cost. So we went to online authorization, which is a lower transaction fee. So our costs are now about 6 cents on the dollar.
But I want to make sure that we hear as well those concerns and complaints, and Commissioner Fish, and it's totally appropriate that you expect us to continue to improve on the turnaround times, and we think with the new technology we will have more reliable service on the street, and that they provide us with the opportunity to upgrade cellular or wireless tech connections and to make them work faster in the future.
What I'm also hearing, though, Mayor, is that there's no surcharge on the use of the smart card, right?
Correct.
No.
So all that money, I mean, if we had an extra 6% coming back into the transportation budget, that would be very nice, wouldn't it? So in other words, it's the civic-minded thing to do to buy a smart card and use it rather than using your credit card. How does a citizen get a hold of a smart card?
Well, right now, the smart cards that we've been using since 2003, we ran out of the supply of those. I bought about 20,000 of them initially, and we use all of those up. And because of the popularity of smart cards and the nature of that type of smart card, I was told that the price of those have gone up to about $10 a piece, which we thought was very expensive and would be difficult to get.
It's the card.
Right. So what we're doing now, we're actually in the process of updating a smart card business case that we performed back in 2004, where we're going to be re-looking at the type of card that we would use for this type of activity. And hopefully, once that analysis is complete, it's just starting up, that we'd be out with the public with another card that we could use and for a variety of purposes, hopefully, not just parking.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone wish to testify on non-emergency ordinance 377?
No one signed up.
Moves to a second reading. Can you please read second reading item number 378?
Vacate a portion of Southwest 19th Avenue and Southwest Seymour Street subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Who's here to?
Second reading.
Second. Oh, sorry. Please call the vote.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 379?
Authorize long-term bonds for local improvement and sidewalk repair projects and financing of system development charges.
Mr. Ingerson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. This ordinance authorizes up to $25 million of limited tax improvement bonds to finance the cost of LID projects, sidewalk repairs, and system development projects. The bonds will be repaid from the revenues from assessment contracts that the city has entered into with benefiting property owners. In addition, the bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the city. We expect to be selling the bonds probably the second week of April, closing later in April, and we will be selling the bonds through competitive bidding. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions. Oh, by the way, Eric Johansson, City Debt Manager.
Questions, comments? Anyone wish to testify in this matter? Can you please call the vote?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for procurement report, item number 380?
Accept bid of Emery and Sons Construction, Inc., for the Fano Basin Pump Station Pressure Line Garden Home Section Replacement Project for $6,335,357.
Hi, how are you, Christine?
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. And before you have the procurement report recommending a contract award to the low bidder in the amount of $6,335,357. The city identified 15 divisions of work for potential minority, women, and emerging small business subcontracting opportunities. The participation on this project is at 51.6%, and work is being performed in the areas of concrete cutting, asphalt paving, trucking, and crane services. I'll turn this back over to council if you have any questions about the bidding process.
Anyone have any questions, comments? Does anyone wish to testify in procurement report number 380? I will entertain a motion to accept.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the procurement report item number 380?
Fritz.
Good to see the participation of women and minority small businesses. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. purchasing report approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, item 381?
Approve the 10th Amendment to the Airport Way Urban Renewal Plan to reduce plan area by approximately 870 acres.
This is a second reading. Can you please call the vote?
This was a very interesting hearing. I appreciate the folks from East Portland Action Plan coming in and also the response of the Portland Development Commission regarding what to do next with urban renewal. This particular ordinance doesn't say what we're going to do with the excess acres, if anything. It merely takes some out. I was particularly interested to see that although we're taking acreage out and the value of that taxing amount could come back to the city in $3.5 million. It actually already comes back to the city, and we're already getting over $17 million in tax, what would have been tax increment financing, but is in fact now value to the city. Because this district has been so successful, we are already, even though it's not quite retired yet, getting $17 million of benefit to the taxing jurisdiction. So this is evidence that the urban renewal district has worked, and I'm pleased to see that the size of the acreage is going down. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm also pleased about the acreage going down, but I just wanted to once again recognize the outstanding success of this particular urban renewal area, the Airport Way. Not only did it produce the IKEA, which is probably its most notable icon of that area, but it has created over 17,000 jobs within the boundaries of the urban renewal area. So it's been a big success. Please just support this. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for resolution, Council Calendar Item 382?
Establish $275,000 as the maximum price for newly constructed single-unit housing eligible for a limited property tax exemption in a homebuyer opportunity area for 2010, according to Chapter 3.102.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to call Kate Allen from the New Portland Housing Bureau forward. Mayor and Commissioners, this matter was originally intended to be placed on the consent agenda. We think we can do this from soup to nuts in 1 minute. I please introduce Kate Allen.
Thanks.
Bring the mic around.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Commissioner Fish, do you have an amendment to this to introduce? Does the amendment simply corrects the calculations that were placed in the backing documents? There is no change to the resolution in front of you. Which?
All right, no substantive change, and it just cleans up it's just a housekeeping matter.
This is right. So the resolution itself is a housekeeping matter. We're annually required to establish the price cap. The 109 approvals for the single family program that were on the consent agenda are approved under this program. We're continuing the same cap from 2008, 2009 into 2010 of $275,000 as the maximum price under this program. The amendment that you have is simply to correct the calculation that was in the backing documents.
Mayor, I move the amendment.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Anyone wish to testify on the amendment? Carla, can you please call the vote on the amendment?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Amendment approved. Commissioner Fish.
Question.
Oh, there's a question.
Question. Commissioner Fritz.
And I appreciate the speed. Each one of these items is really important, and I want folks to understand them. Could you just briefly explain why the price cap is $275,000, which is 110% of the median house price?
The Multnomah County gave us the information at the end of November that the median family price was $250,000. What we understand is that in some of the opportunity areas, some of our home buyers with assistance are finding properties that are slightly above that. We are below our cap of what we could do with this program. So maintaining the same level that we saw in probably the most depressed home buying market into this year where we hope we are seeing a little more activity. We continue to hope that we see low-income and qualifying homebuyers who are sort of making their way through the pipeline right now succeed in buying homes with this exemption in some of those locations.
So the key is that we're not saying this is a particularly affordable house price. What we're doing is targeting the home buying in particular neighborhoods in the opportunity areas.
Correct.
That's why we would do the tax abatement.
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. This is a resolution. Is there anyone wish to testify on it?
No one signed up.
Carla, can you please call the vote on resolution item number 382?
Fritz?
The home buyer opportunity areas are carefully mapped, and they look at the more distressed or areas where there are not as many homeowners, and help folks who are either moving up from starter homes or have recently been able to purchase a home like this, and up to this limit. It doesn't say that it's only this limit. And so it's a good program, which is carefully researched, and I'm pleased to support it. Good work, Commissioner Fish. Aye.
Fish?
Thank you, Kate, for all of your outstanding work at the New Portland Housing Bureau. Aye.
Thank you, sir.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Great work, Commissioner Fish. Thank you. Kate?
Aye.
Can you please read continuation of, I believe, an ordinance, item number 383?
Resolution.
Is it a resolution?
Yep.
Continuation of a resolution, item number 383.
Declare that it is the policy of the City of Portland to defend the 2006 voter-approved reforms to the Fire and Police Disability Retirement and Death Benefit Plan.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. In November of 2006, the Portland City Council asked voters to consider comprehensive reforms of the fire, police, disability, and retirement system. Those reforms included making changes to the pension system to stabilize the city's economic future and sweeping reforms to the disability system. Prior to 2006, the fire, police, disability, and retirement system and the disability program in particular, was viewed by many, including myself, as mismanaged, unprofessional, and fraught with fraud. There were apparent able-bodied workers who received disability checks from the taxpayer-supported fund when it readily appeared that they were more than capable of work. The poster child for this reform effort was former firefighter turned chef at a taxpayer expense, and who ran and owned two successful restaurants and yet still received taxpayer-supported disability checks. I worked hard to spearhead the reforms of 2006 to this system to ensure a fair and independent system run by experts. When voters finally had the opportunity to approve these reforms, they snatched that opportunity and resoundingly approved these reforms by a margin of 82%, which I think is probably the highest ever on any city election. The reforms have been extremely successful. We are saving taxpayers 24% in disability costs in just four short years, including initiating successful return to work programs and ensuring that those who can work do work. Today, we are faced with many challenges to those reforms, a challenge to the will of the Portland voters, and that challenge comes from the poster child for the reforms, former firefighter turned chef, Tom Hurley. After the reforms were passed, Hurley was determined by doctors to be no longer to be disabled, and eligible to return to work. The city offered him a position. Instead of returning to work, two legal challenges were filed, one which ended up in an odd ruling which threatens to unravel the reforms of the system. An arbitrator in a labor grievance has ruled that the city needs to continue to pay Hurley despite the fact that he is capable of working. On behalf of the voters and the taxpayers of Portland, we, the City Council, need to ensure that we defend the reforms they made to the system. And that's what this resolution before us does. It affirms the will of the voters, it protects the Portland taxpayers, and it says we aren't going to tolerate fraud and deceit, spending taxpayer dollars to to pay someone who just wants to milk the system. So that's the resolution. The reason I set it over a week is as a result of some discussions with Commissioner Fish and the city attorney. And I'd like to offer an amendment to the resolution. And this amendment is to clarify that if a legal strategy is developed by the city attorney to mitigate potential damages in any of the legal challenges